Well, for the last few weeks, we've had people telling their story, their sex story, also some love in there on video, and today we're going to do one live. A friend of mine, who I heard her story not too long ago, and I thought we'd all be benefited to hear her live in the flesh. And are you, is your husband okay, us sitting on the same bed together? You know, is that?
I don't think that he's that concerned about or intimidated by you, Brian. No concerns.
Okay, good, good. Good answer, good answer. So Christine, you know, a lot of us have been sitting in here, and these words up here are foreign to us. We're not sure of exactly everything that's happening up in these words that we've been singing, or some of us have been singing or reciting. And that was similar to how you were when you first came to Crossroads. A lot has happened inside of you. Take us back, though, way, way long time ago. What was it like in the church that you grew up in?
I grew up in church. I grew up with my mom taking me to church and my dad sleeping in on Sundays. My dad was abusive and angry, and so I loved going to church on Sunday because he didn't go. So that's the way that I grew up for a significant part of my original church life, was attending church as an escape from home. And then when I turned 12, in August and was about to start seventh grade, it meant that I was old enough to be a part of what would be like CSM here. We called it youth group, but same thing, student ministry. Ours was 7th through 12th grade, so I was excited to start and a little nervous. And on the very first night that I went to youth group, ours was like a space that met, kind of like if you were to go back over there, it was like a space through there. And there was a guy who took me by the hand, who presented himself as a youth leader. I thought that he was one of the leaders, and he grabbed me by the hand and walked me into the sanctuary, which at the time was completely dark because there was nobody meeting there because it was just a weeknight, and took me by the hand and led me across the auditorium up into the balcony and sexually abused me right in the sanctuary of the church. The biggest problem for that really was not only what happened, but that he continued to attend the church. So I would see him when I would go to church on Sundays. And our youth group sat, or our student ministry sat, kind of like over here. And it meant every time that I looked at the pastor, sort of what was in the corner of my eye was the location where this thing had happened, which meant I couldn't hear the story of Jesus and God told from stage without ever disconnecting that from shame and guilt and fear and pain for me. So my church life from then on out became just continuing to affirm to me somehow that Jesus was a bad thing. So I had my escape, which had been Sunday morning church, was gone. So it started to become school for me. I kind of threw myself into school, and that was where I liked to be. And that worked for seventh grade. When I started eighth grade, the year that followed, I went to a fairly small school, but there was a boy who started that year who had flunked out of a couple other schools, was much older, shouldn't have been in my grade, and was a part of, joined the school that year. And maybe based on where I had come from, I had become kind of feisty, to maybe ward off anybody that happening again. I didn't want to seem meek. I wanted to seem
strong.
Yeah, I had it together. So, I still think I have it together, but anyways, when, I presented it falsely then, this guy dared me to go into the boys' bathroom on a truth or dare game that we were playing, with a group of people, and I did it. And what I didn't expect, though, was that he followed me into the bathroom and raped me in one of the stalls in the bathroom of the school. That meant one more escape that I had had up to that point had disappeared. So there wasn't anywhere that I could go in my life at that time that felt safe. I just was tense all of the time and in shame and fear constantly. Then when I was about 15, I had heard a speaker and kind of caught for a second, like, oh, if I become a Christian, that means I go to heaven someday. Oh, wait, I get it. Like, that'll be my escape. There isn't one here, so give me my ticket, because someday I'm going to heaven, and I'll get away from all of this. So I did commit my life to Christ, but I don't think I understood at all what it meant to let him really lead you or to really follow. I just wanted my ticket so I could escape. So I did that at the age of 15, and a couple years later, one morning, I woke up and heard arguing, and it was my parents. That wasn't uncommon, but it was a little heated, and I found out later what had happened is my mom was threatening to leave my dad, and in the midst of that, my dad was like, oh, no, I'm going to become a Christian. Like, I'll pray right now. I'll do whatever it takes. Don't leave me. And my dad did the prayer, and came into my room and was like, I'm a Christian now, I'm forgiven. And he was so happy, and I was so not happy. For me, that meant that the one escape that I was, like, hanging to, he was going to be there. Like, no. So, as happy as he was, I was not. And I had a very natural response to that. I went out for the first time that night and got very drunk for the first time in my life, because I was still looking for an escape. So I got very, very drunk at a party with a group of friends. And there was one guy there who was very aware of that, that to me was somebody I hadn't even noticed. And when I got very drunk, he very brutally raped me that night. So where I came to at that point was there just couldn't possibly be a God. If there was a God, I don't want anything to do with him anyways. I mean, anybody would let this happen. So I was very angry and coped at that point with drinking continually and having a lot of sex with a lot of different partners.
Was that sex painful?
Well, you never think it's painful in the moment. Like, I was pursuing it. Yeah. So I wanted to do it. I pursued it. I thought it was fun. Yes, it left me emptier every time. And I know now that the reason why I was doing it was because I was in so much pain and felt so unbelievably powerless around sex and around the issue of men, that the way I felt like I could kind of regain my power was to be in control of it. Like, I have this power to attract men, and I have this power to, you know, have sex with them, and I own it. And I'd just given up that God thought I should be a virgin anyway, so to me it was like, might as well just own this, it's going to happen anyways.
So years goes by, and you decide to come to Crossroads. Why'd you decide, and then what happened when you came?
Well, I ended up, in the midst of all that, meeting the man that would later be my husband. And in spite of how crazy of a person I was at the time, he just seemed to love me in spite of that, or because of it, or something. And he just had a holistic love for me, and that was definitely the beginning of my healing. And I started to seek counseling at that time. He encouraged me to do that. Like, I was really trying to do something about it. And we got married, and I had a baby a couple years later, and I looked at that baby, and I thought, I am going to screw her up. Like, there is no way I'm going to get this right. Like, I am so not okay. I'm going to put it on her. Like, I was so worried. And I got a thing saying something about, I had heard about Crossroads, and I thought, well, like, maybe there's something for me there. Maybe there's something for her there. Maybe there's something. So I came and was totally shocked when I came. It still shocks me when I think of this. I came, and there was a man working in the nursery. So it meant that I had to take my brand new baby, my 5-month-old baby, if I was going to do this thing, and hand her to a man that I had never met before. And I think what blows...
Which is a great idea for all 5-month-old babies who are in here. That's a good idea. Yeah, I'm sorry. I had to get that little plug. Okay, go ahead.
It is. And the reason why it is because when I hand my baby over, the most shocking thing for me was that I wasn't worried. Like, I felt so much love from this person that I just knew my baby was going to be okay. And it shocked me even as I was doing it. Like, my baby's going to be in great hands. I'm just going to go enjoy myself. And I think that's so amazing. So I think it's a, I think it's really cool to think that the things that we do around here are so much bigger than watching kids.
So what did God start to do in you through this, through the whole time coming and whatever?
I continued to come and just sit in the dark room and drink my coffee. And actually, at first, still when I would hear the name Jesus, I would be sort of like, like it just had never gone away for me. But because I could keep coming and keep listening and keep feeling love and experiencing love, I started to understand that Jesus was a gentleman, that he was willing to wait for me, and he was willing to be patient, and almost saw it as a courtship, like that there was this process of him just wooing me and loving me. So after a few years of attending here, I gave my heart to Christ. And that was the beginning, really. I mean, I still had healing to do. It wasn't like I gave my heart to Christ and it was like, woo, everything's
good. That's right. It's on a neat, tidy bow. And then you had friends. You got in a small group. Yes, they started pushing you. Tell everyone what happened with the small group and the thing they pushed you to go to in order to go to a new place of healing.
Well, I was attending a small group that was a group of women, and somebody suggested to me that what would be really great for me to do would be to go back to that church where I was originally hurt and to pray to God in that location, that might be really powerful for me. And I was like, yeah, you're right. That would be really powerful. I will never do that. That is not happening. I think the things that are the most healing are some of the scariest things that we can possibly do. But because I had these women surrounding me and going, have you thought about doing that? Are you still thinking about doing it? I think maybe you should do that. And because they continued to nudge me, I eventually called up the church where I had gone and said, could I just come in there sometime when nobody's in there and just pray? I just want to pray in the sanctuary. And they were like, sure. So I showed up.
And by the way, this is not a Catholic church. I mean, this Protestant church, we all have problems.
There's screwed up people in every church.
Yeah. Including. Not that screwed up. But yeah.
So I think that's the great thing about being in a church that talks about sex openly, though. Yeah.
So what happened when you went to the church?
So I went to the church and I started at exactly the location where the man had taken my hand. I just started there. And I started walking the exact path, and I just started talking with God. And I just started praying and talking and talking and praying and talking and praying. And I just kept walking the path, and I walked all the way up into that balcony, and I got to that location, and it was like, man, I was so angry. And I realized I wasn't just angry at this man who had done this. I was angry at God that this had happened. And I let him have it. Like, I just opened up. I was like, why did you let this happen? I used plenty of swear words. He could handle it. And I just gave it to him. And the truth is, by doing that, I just emptied. Like, I just emptied all of it. I just let him have it. 3 to 4 hours, actually, I was there praying in that way. And after a while, I got to a place where it was like there wasn't really anything else I needed to say. I'd said it all. And all I was saying at that point was, heal this temple, meaning this temple, my body, heal this temple, heal this temple. And I just started almost begging when I look back and think about it. I was just begging, heal this temple. And miraculously, he did, because I started to just, where I'd emptied all of that out, it was like his spirit just moved in. And I just felt the most amazing love I'd ever felt. My whole life, I never felt love like that before. And I found myself even saying, heal this temple, meaning heal the temple that I was in, heal that church and anybody that it had ever happened to there. And then I started understanding I wanted anybody who had ever experienced pain like that, that was a part of the church, heal every temple, heal anything that had happened like this at Crossroads, heal. I just felt so connected to something bigger than myself.
You know, we have people in here who have been victimized like you, that need that sort of healing. We also have other people in here, perhaps on the other side of the spectrum, guys who've never victimized anybody or been victimized, but are maybe being healed because of attitudes and behaviors that just took for granted, realizing, ooh, that stuff, I'm getting healed of those kind of mindsets. And there's been a lot of stuff that's been stirring up in here. Sex lives and marriages have been healed or are being healed. How's yours, by the way? Good?
Smoking.
Good. All right. That's what we're doing today, is responding in that way. And so I'm thinking it might be really good. Why don't you pray for women right now, and then I'll pray for men, all right?
God, I just thank you for every woman that's in this place. And I know what it's like to sit in this room and to experience you, Jesus. And I just pray that each woman here would have that experience. And God, for each woman here who has at any time in her life just felt like she was an object instead of a whole person, God, I just pray that in this moment she would experience your love and would be able to understand how you see her as a whole person, God. And I just pray that healing would pour down on the women in this room, that we would be just healed temples, God.
Yes.
And God, there has been men who've been victimized, either as little boys or they feel victimized because they feel women sometimes come on to them very, very strong in order to retain them, or they need healing because they've been a conqueror going after women as conquests, and are seeing that there's a new loving way to look at the opposite sex and a new loving way to look at you. And so I pray that you continue to mold the minds and the attitudes and hearts of the men in here to be real men, to not be predators, but to be protectors. God, create clean hearts in here. Continue that process right now. One of the things we've worked really hard on in this series is to not use fear as a motivator. And so we really haven't wanted to touch too much on sexually transmitted diseases and that sort of thing. But, you know, if I would ask everyone who has a sexually transmitted disease to stand up, those of us who don't would be surprised, shocked how prevalent it is. And I was reminded of this last week when talking with a couple who's very good friends of mine, very just great looking couple. And they told me about the first time they had sex before they were married. They, you know, didn't know the Bible, weren't even trying to follow God or any such thing. And they talked about the first time they had the talk. And they called it the talk. I said, what's the talk? I said, well, we had to sit down and talk with each other about what STDs we had before we had sex for the first time. I said, really? I knew that STDs were very prevalent. I hadn't thought this was a natural and healthy, relatively healthy conversation before we'd have sex for the first time. I said, yeah, so we had to say, well, yeah, I have this one. Oh, I don't have that one. Well, I got this one. Okay, well, you know, I'm going to have that one then. And they had to do that whole thing. And they had protected sex, condom-wise, but they're not foolproof. And then, of course, when they got married, they weren't having protected sex. Obviously, it was every STD the one had, the other one got, and every STD the one had, the other one got. And I thought, in some strange way, that is one of the most loving things I've ever heard. To go into something with your eyes wide open, saying that I love you and I want to be with you so much that I'm willing to receive all of your nasties, and you're going to receive all of my nasties. As I thought about it, I thought about what's in your bags here today. If you want to go ahead and take those out, take those bags and open those up, you can. I started thinking about these little Skyline crackers here. Yeah, Skyline crackers. You know, these Skyline crackers are what you would have when you would have a meal with somebody. Jesus had a meal with his friends. And one of his meals is very well known. It's practiced very regularly for the last 2,000 years. It's called the Lord's Supper. It's when Jesus had a meal with his small group before he was killed. Some people call it communion because he was communing with people. Some people call it the Eucharist because what's signified in this meal is grace. That's what Eucharist, charis, grace in the Greek. Some people call it the Mass because it's the body, the mass of Jesus that's broken. And this tends to be a very mindless thing that people do. They don't understand the roots of it. Or it's a thing that people do that don't have a relationship with Jesus, and it's entirely inappropriate. We're going to do this morning. It's going to be something that you can do if it is relevant for you. Let me read this for you. Here's what happens. While they were eating, Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it, and he gave it to his disciples, saying, take and eat. This is my body. They're having a meal. They're having some little wafer. You know, in church we have some little wafer, some little chunk of bread or something like that. That's just a very poor representation of what was happening. They were having a full-on meal. And as they were having this multisensorial experience, Jesus says, hey, from now on, when you have a meal, anytime you have a meal, I want you to think about how my body is broken for you. Because when you receive me, I get all of you and you get all of me. As you take me in, all of who you are, I get, and all of who I am, you get. See, when you come to a place when you receive Jesus, when you say, man, I just want you in my life. I want to live my life for you. I don't know exactly what that means. I just want you. What happens is Jesus takes on all of your sin. He takes on all of your rebellion. He takes on all of your gossip. He takes on all of your sexual exploits. He takes on all of your greed. He takes on all of your hatred. He takes on all of your racism. He takes on all of your everything that is against the heart of God. that should be punished. You and I should be punished. There should be justice come our way. But Jesus says, I'm going to take all that on. And he breaks his body. He takes his body, his bread, he breaks it. He stretches it out and he gets nails through his hands, nails through his feet, broken for all those people who have become like him. You know, if that's not a place where you are right now, I want to ask you to be a person of integrity and just sit there and process through this. These elements are for people who have received Jesus, or right now you're going to receive for the first time. You're going to have your first communion. Jesus said, all who want to be united with me, take and eat. This is my body broken for you. Now, if you're really hungry, go ahead after the whole bag. That's fine. Or if you just want one, that's cool too. So they do this, signifying that they're really one. They're ingesting him. And then he goes on and says this. Then he took the cup. When he had given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. For many. Not everyone. Just because Jesus did what he did doesn't mean everybody received that. It's for people who unite themselves with him. Remember we talked about sex being this ultimate act of connection? When you connect yourself with Jesus, you get the benefits of him. All of he has, you get. All of his holiness, you get. All of his love that you get. If this is not a place where you are, you don't get that until you receive him. In your little bag, there's two little vials. One's grape juice and one is wine. Wine is the darker tinted one. You can also smell just to make sure you know which one it is. And Jesus says, hey, this blood, it's going to be poured out for you. I'm going to be whipped. I'm going to be scourged. My blood is poured out. You're going to get everything that I get. You know what you get when you receive Jesus? All of him you get. You know what that means? You get his holiness, you get his love, you get his purity, to the point where when God looks at you, he doesn't see your sex past. When God looks at you, he doesn't see your gossip. When God looks at you, he doesn't see your greed. It's so amazing. When God looks at you, the scriptures are very clear. He sees Jesus. He sees holiness. He sees perfection. He sees a new identity. He sees a phenomenal son, a phenomenal daughter. That's what God, when he sees, looks at you. Why? Because all of Jesus, you get everything that he has, which is only great stuff, you all receive. If you want to recapture this, or capture for the first time and receive, drink. You have right now, there's an empty vial. This signifies the way you come to Christ, empty. You don't come full of yourself. That's why prideful people don't receive. Because prideful people want to work it out. You come empty. You come saying, I want to receive from you. And if this will be helpful to you, if it'll be helpful to you, we have up here a mended heart. We have up here the heart of God. The heart of God that awaits for you. And if it'll be helpful for you, you can just come right up to the edge of the stage, come downstairs here, just come up and say, I want to cast away this emptiness into the heart of God. God, I pray this happens. I pray that your grace right now reigns on people to where we receive all that you are and we walk in confidence of this. To be meaningful for you, just come on down and throw your emptiness onto the heart of God, then you can go back to your seat.